Okay, so let's ask a few questions about the upcoming Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah. So the first question, so imagine the following scenario. So school starting this week. So what would happen if on the first day of school, the teachers would decide to administer a final? And the final would be all the previous material from the previous year. So what would happen? Things would not go over so well. People would be screaming at the principal. People would up in arms. And then the question begs itself. Chaim Friedlander, the Ponovich Rosh Yeshiva, asks, I don't understand. Why is it that Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaDin, is on the first day of the year? It should be the last day of the year. Why is it that we're being judged for all of our previous actions in the previous year on the first day of the next year? If it's an counting of everything that happened in the previous year, so it should be the last day of the previous year. So Chaim Friedlander says, well, what's going on here? Why is Rosh Hashanah, the day, the Yom HaDin, the first day of the next year? That's the first question. And the second question, so we call Rosh Hashanah our davening, refer to it as Yom HaZikaron. Now, this is very strange. When it comes to Pesach, we call the Yom Tov Chag HaMatzah. So when do we eat the matzah? On Pesach. What do we call the Yom Tov Sukkos? Chag Sukkos. We do the mitzvah Sukkah on Sukkos. We call Rosh Hashanah Yom HaZikaron. Now, what's the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah? Chua, the shofar. So why is it that we refer to Rosh Hashanah our davening as Yom HaZikaron? Why not refer to it after its mitzvah, the shofar? Why don't we call it Yom Teruah? And then a third question, Rissel Salanter and many others, they pose the following question, that really, logically, it makes sense for Yom Kippur to come before Rosh Hashanah, meaning for us to receive Tahara, for us to be pure, and once we do that, then we'd be able to properly be Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Rissel Salanter asks, so why is it that on Rosh Hashanah we don't make any mention of sin, we don't do Vidur, there's no Chay, no, what's going on here? Why is it that on Rosh Hashanah we have it before Yom Kippur, even though logically it'd make more sense to have Yom Kippur before Rosh Hashanah? So to address these questions, I want to start with the Zohar. So the Zohar in Parshas Nitzavim says, Atem Nitzavim Hayom, says the Zohar, Hayom is a reference to Rosh Hashanah. So let's ask a few questions on the Zohar. What's Pshat? Atem Nitzavim Hayom is referring to Rosh Hashanah. What does the Zohar mean? And the second question, what's the significance of the word Nitzavim as opposed to the word Omdim? Logically, the word Omdim should have been chosen. Why Nitzavim? What's the difference between a Nitziv versus Omid, Amud? And then the third question, the Parsha, when it comes there, discusses the fact that the Torah is talking about the bris, the covenant that's being made with all of the Jewish people, whether it be the water carrier or the wood chopper or whatever, it doesn't matter. So what's the message you're supposed to take from the fact that the Torah is speaking to every single Jewish person? So perhaps we can explain as follows. The difference between the Netziv and an Omid, the difference between the Netziv and the Amud, is that Amud just means straight, but a Netziv, a pillar, is ramrod straight. What's the difference between straight and ramrod straight? So let's illustrate the following example. Like, imagine someone was trying to walk 100 miles north. And instead of being directly on target, they're just off a little bit. So what would happen? At the beginning of their journey, they're not going to notice that they're off. 100 miles later, they're going to be completely off from where they want to be. And that is the same thing when it comes to us in Rosh Hashanah. If Atem Nitzavim Hayom, if we're not completely ramrod straight in Rosh Hashanah, if we're not completely aligned, reoriented with the trajectory of the world, what we're supposed to be, then much later on in the year, then we're going to be completely off from the target that we're supposed to be at. And the significance of the fact that the Torah says Atem Nitzavim Hayom to every single Jewish person, whether it be the leaders of the Jewish people, whether it be the water carriers, is telling us the message that every single Jewish person has a role in the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and every single person on Rosh Hashanah has to reorient themselves, realign themselves with the trajectory of the world. And let's explain this point about the trajectory of the world based off the Ramban, based off many others. So the Ramban explains in Parshas Nitzavim, in Perek Lam Pasuk Vav, that the trajectory of the world is that the world is reverting back to its state of Adam HaRishon Kodem Machet, that the future is just going back to the past. In the Ramban, Rabbeinu Bechaya, and many others, they explain that the Torah in Parshas Nitzavim, when it presents the Parsha of Tshuva, it's not this is what you should do. But Rabbi says, Ramban Rabbein Bechai, it's a Havtacha, it's a promise that the world is eventually going to do Tshuva as a whole. And in a certain sense, it's a great mystery. How is it that we're able to be promised that the world's going to do Tshuva, but we're given free will? So the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tshuva is the ultimate realization of the Ratzon of Hashem and bring the world back to where it's meant to be, we are given the decision whether or not to join that trajectory, to realign ourselves with that, but it's going to happen whether or not we want it. Meaning that tshuva in the fullest sense is the realization of the fact that the world's heading back to its state of Adam Rishon Karn Mechet. We have the choice of doing our part and joining that trajectory, but if we don't, it's still going to happen. And with this in mind, now let's understand the structure of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah and how it relates to our avoda, what we're supposed to think about in Rosh Hashanah. So the Sefer HaIkrim explains that the Gimel Ikari Emuna, our three fundamental pillars of faith, are encapsulated in the brachos, or correspond to the brachos of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofar. So Yosef Albo in the Sefer HaIkrim writes that the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam can be boiled down to three, namely belief in God, belief in God's omnipotence, Hashkacha, Hashkacha Pratis, and then belief in Torah and Shemaim. And explains of Yosef Albo, that corresponds to Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchus is about our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zichronos is about our belief in Hashkacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is intervening in the world. And Shofros, the Shofros Bracha in Rosh Hashanah, talks all about Torah, giving of the Torah at High Sinai. And explains of Yosef Albo that on the Chazal specifically instituted that the first day of the year on Rosh Hashanah, the Musaf, should correspond to our three fundamental pillars of faith. And if we look at the structure of the Musaf, let's just take a step back and look at the structure of the Musaf. So the way that the Musaf is structured is that first you have an introductory paragraph to the Bracha. So for example, in Malchus, we have an introductory paragraph about the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For Zichronos, we have an introductory paragraph talking about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers all events. And for Shofros, we have an introductory paragraph about the Shofar that was heard at Har Sinai, etc. After that, in the Brachos, we cite 10 psukim from Tanakh to prove or to enhance that belief. So first, we say 3 psukim from Torah. Then we say 3 psukim from Ksuvim, specifically Sefer Tehillim. Then we say 3 psukim from Nevi'im. And then lastly, at the end, we say a 10th pasuk from the Torah. So that we do for both Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. At the very end of the bracha, we add a tefillah about that we want the Malchus Hashem to come true. We want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember the bris. And then for Shofros, we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to blow the Shofar Gadol at the end of days. So that's the structure of Musaf. And what's going on here? So on Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the year, when we dive in the Musaf, which, as Rav Yosef Albo explains, corresponds to our three fundamental pillars of faith, what we are doing is that we are reaffirming our belief in the core pillars of our religion. But on a deeper level, what we're doing is that we're inserting ourselves into the trajectory of the world and realigning ourselves with whom we are meant to be. And let's explain this point. So it's interesting, the Rishonim, Tosus, the Ran, they're all bothered that when it comes to the way that we say the psukim in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, the order seems to be a little bit backwards, because we start with 3 psukim from the Torah, then we say 3 psukim from Ksuvim, and then we say 3 psukim from Nevi'im. Now, what's strange about this? Normally, we go in the order of Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. So why all of a sudden are we going Torah, Ksuvim, Nevi'im? So Rav Tzadok HaKohen and Rav Salvechik, now if you know Rav Tzadok and Rav Salvechik said the same thing, then it's probably true, because they're two opposites from the extreme. So both of them explain, because why are we going Torah, Ksuvim, Nevi'im? Because what we're doing is we're tapping into the past, the present, and the future, meaning that the Torah is recording events of the past. Then we're saying 3 psukim from Ksuvim, specifically from Sefer Tehillim, because Sefer Tehillim, written by David HaMelech, is talking to every single Jew in the present. And then we say 3 psukim from Nevi'im, because the Nevi'im, the prophets, they're prophesizing about the future. And the point is that we're reaffirming our beliefs in the Malchios, in the Zichronos, in the Shofros, that they are carrying the world in the past, in the present, and in the future. But as my friend Yair Kaplan pointed out very beautifully, what's the last pasuk? The last pasuk is a verse from the Torah, because as we said earlier from the Ramban, the world is heading back to its original state of Amir Rishon Kohen Mechet. So we're going in the order of past, present, with the psukim from Ksuvim, then the three psukim from Nevi'im, future, then we say another pasuk from the Torah to go back to the past. Because that's the trajectory of the world. The trajectory of the world is that the past is the future, and the future is the past. And when we say the Malchus Zichronos and Chofros on Rosh Hashanah, we're reaffirming not only the fact that we believe that this is the, that Malchus Zichronos and Chofros are the trajectory of the world, but we're also reaffirming the fact that we believe that the trajectory of the world is one, that the Malchus Zichronos and Chofros are just going back to the past. We're going back to the state of Admir Rishon, Kodem Mechet. And we'll just add that the Mate Moshe, so he points out, is a very fascinating comment. He explains that the word, on Rosh Hashanah, we talk a lot about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. At the very end of the Shemona Esrei, the Bracha of Kedushas Yom, we add the phrase, Ki Ata Elokim Emes, Dvaracha Emes, V'Kayim La'od. So why are we talking about, eight times every single day in Rosh Hashanah, we talk about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. So what's going on here? So the Mate Moshe explains that the word Emes, truth, is a Rosh Tevos. It's an acronym for our three core beliefs. That Aleph stands for Elohim, Mem, meaning referring to the fact that the belief in existence of God, Mem stands for Mashkiach, the fact that we believe that God is omnipotent in the world, and Tav stands for Torah. And the point being, as the Zohar, as the Gemara, Masechta Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Daled teach, only something which is true is able to last. Falsehood dissipates, but something that's true lasts forever and forever. So the real emes, the real truth in the world, is the Malchus Zichronos and Chofros, because that is what the world was created upon, and that's what's going to bring the world to its destination. And based off of this, now we can understand an additional thing that we do in the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, and specifically Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, etc. During these days, we have the custom from the times of the Rishon Megaonim to add phrases requesting for life in davening. So we say, Zachreinu L'chaim, we talk about Uksova and Uchaim. At the end of the Shemona Esrei, we talk about the fact that Hashem should rise in the Sefer Chaim, etc. So what's going on here? Why are we adding all these phrases about Chaim to Shemona Esrei? So explains the Meiri Nischibur Atshuva. He writes very beautifully that when something is new, we tend to get inspired. So during the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, we add phrases about life for us to be inspired to repent and to remind ourselves about true life. And perhaps we can explain this, what the Miri means, based off an idea of Hirsch. So if Hirsch writes as Ma'agali Hashano, that the idea of tefillah, the word tefillah, is from a language of palal, which means to judge, plilim. The word plilim means to judge. When we daven, we're judging ourselves whether our values are aligned with our Creator's. And on Rosh Hashanah, in Aseres Yemei Teshuva, we're davening for life, we're judging ourselves whether we truly want to live. Because what's life all about? Explains the Maharal, explains many others, life, Chayim, is synonymous with eternity. Because when we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Elohim Chayim, Chaim, to mean that he's just physically alive, obviously that doesn't make any sense. But we're referring to the eternal aspect of the Creator. So in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, we refer to a Mayan, a spring, as Mayim Chaim, because the point is that the source of the spring is within itself. In Gan Eden, the tree that provided long life was called Etz HaChaim, because it provided longevity. So on Rosh Hashanah, when we're davening for Chaim, what we're davening for is we're davening to be connected back to the Makor HaChaim. The only way that person is able to live eternally is to be connected to the one that's eternal. Adam HaRishon, before he sinned on Rosh Hashanah, was connected completely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's no death in this world. Every single year in Rosh Hashanah, we're re-tapping back into the existence of Adam HaRishon before he sinned, and we're davening for the fact that we should be granted life, true life, the ability to live eternally. And as we explained, based off of Hirsch and based off the Meiri, the point is that on Rosh Hashanah, on Aseres Mitzvah, when we add these phrases, we're supposed to be judging ourselves as well, judging ourselves whether we really want to be living eternally and whether our values are truly in line, are truly oriented with those of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really our avodah on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we are given the decision whether we want to be a part of the eternal path of creation, meaning that the world is headed to its trajectory, the world is heading to its final destination, and the choice that's given up to us is whether we want to be a part of that or not. On Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, in the second parak, Halacha Dalet, that the shofar is meant to inspire us, it's meant to reawaken us from our slumber, to remind ourselves of the true path that we're meant to be on. So when we hear the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, it's meant to inspire us to realize the potential exists inside of us, and that the true life that we're hoping for, as the Rambam writes, is not the Havu El Mazah, it's not the vanities of this world, but it's really something much deeper and much greater. And of this, now we can understand why Rosh Hashanah is called Yom HaZikaron. Because what's the significance of memory? So in psychology, they refer to two types of memory. There's the lower memory, meaning just the fact that a person can remember things that are not super important, not so integral to who they are. So for example, a person can remember the way to walk to the grocery store, and then there's a higher form of memory. Or a person remembers things that are truly a part of their essence. And we'll just highlight this, perhaps, with a story from Rav Ovadia Yosef. So Rav Ovadia Yosef was a Goyin Atzum, and he knew around 40,000 Sfarim by the time he passed away. His daily schedule included memorizing a sefer or two on his coffee table, whatever, his table, whatever. He wouldn't pull a sefer on his shelf before he memorized it. And they say that one time the foreign minister from, the educational minister of Israel went to visit Rav Ovadia, discussing yeshiva education or whatever. So Rav Ovadia told them, you should take any book off the shelf. So the minister went to find the most dusty book in the most remote corner. Rav Ovadia started singing the entire thing by heart about that. So Rav Ovadia saves every single night. So Rav Ovadia's schedule is crazy. It was given like 3 or 4 shiurim every single night. So after he was done with his shiurim, he would learn with his son, Chacham David Yosef. Chacham David, they say, is a good chance of being the next Rishon Zion, next chief rabbi. He also knows tens of thousands of songs by heart as well. So they had like a morning seder at night, so I don't know exactly, like from like 1 to 4 or whatever. So every single night, so before they'd learn, Rav Ovadia Yosef would call up Rav David to tell him that he was ready to learn. And every single night, Rav Ovadia would look up in the phone book his son's phone number to be able to call him to learn. So one day, I don't know who asked, or Rav Ovadia's wife asked, or whatever, Rav Davidia asked, they're like, well, I don't understand, like, 40,000 Sfarim by heart, like, Shas, Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, backwards and forwards, like, you can't just memorize the phone number. Why is it that every single night you have to look up the phone number to tell Chacham David to come over to learn? So Rav Ovadia said very beautifully that, I love the Torah, I don't love the phone number. So the point being that a person, remembers things that are important. Things that are not important, they filter away. So some people have very extreme standards to that, like Rav Ovadia. So, okay, they only remember Torah, they're not able to remember other things. But for other people, whatever someone deems to be important becomes a part of them, they will remember. And something that's not important, then they're not going to remember. So explains Rav Lopiansky, if this is true when it comes to human memory, then it's also true when it comes to God's memory as well, meaning that the important events, the important things that we do, they're recorded eternally. They become a part of the existence of the trajectory of the world. But the meaning of the averos we do, and even more than just the averos, the meaningless things that we do, the things that are not important, then they're just filtered out from the eternity of creation. So every single year in Rosh Hashanah, Kadosh Baruch Hu is remembering all of our past deeds and filtering out the things that we did that are not important. And the importance or the significance of tshuva that we do is that we have the ability to turn the non-significant, the non-trivial events in our life and to make them in a permanent part of creation, a permanent part of the trajectory of the world. And on a deeper level as well, in a similar vein, the significance of memory is that memory has the ability to connect the past to the present and allows a person to plan for the future. That the only way a person is able to connect back to their past selves is through memory. So on Rosh Hashanah, as we explained, it's all about the trajectory of the creation. It's all about the past, the present, and the future. The thing that connects the past and present and the future together is through memory. And as we explained, the memory works in two forms. In the important events become a part and parcel of the eternal memory, partner, part of creation. The not important events become filtered away. So on Rosh Hashanah, the point is that we're trying to remind ourselves that what it really matters, that's what's going to be recorded forever and forever. So we call the day Yom HaZikaron because memory is key to the day. It's not just something that's periphery, but rather the day is all about memory in the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Din is remembering our events and permanentizing the events that are intrinsic to bringing the world to where it needs to be. And with this, now we can answer up the questions that we started out with. Because why is it that Rosh Hashanah comes before Yom Kippur? So explains, I don't know if he says this, but many others explain that the point is that before a person does tshuva, they have to know where they're doing tshuva too. On Rosh Hashanah, we highlight the key three pillars of the world, because we need to know what we're doing tshuva for before we're able to do tshuva. The same way Amtrak knows where it wants to lay its tracks before it just builds a railroad, so too when it comes to us, we can't do tshuva before what we know we're doing tshuva for. So in Rosh Hashanah, we highlight the core pillars of the world so we know what we're supposed to be aligned with in order that we're able to do tshuva in the Sesame Tshuva in on Yom Kippur. And likewise, why is it that Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin on the first day of the year? So it explains of Chaim Freelander, because the purpose of the Din Rosh Hashanah is not just to recap everything that we did in the previous year, but it's meant to guide us going forwards in the upcoming year. That the purpose of the Yom HaDin Rosh Hashanah is for us to remind ourselves that our actions are significant, and that they have the ability to bring the world to where it needs to be. And now we can understand why Rosh Hashanah, perhaps specifically called Rosh Hashanah, because the word Rosh in Hebrew means the head. Now, what does a person hopefully do with their head? The head is the place where a person thinks, the makom of machshava. Explains the Svarim, what's the whole idea all about? In Yiddishkeit, we a lot of times find three-stage process, machshava, dibra, maisa, thought, speech, action. That is Chabad, Chochma, Bina, Vadas, the initial spark, the plan, and then the execution of the plan. And that's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, meaning Rosh Hashanah, the initial spark, we're supposed to be aroused to do tshuva, the thought, by hearing the shofar. On Yom Kippur, it's the plan, it's the speech, it's about the vidoy, the tefillah. And then Sukkot, and subsequently the rest of the year, is the execution of that plan. It's taking the lulav, and it's the actions that we do the rest of the year. So the significance of Rosh Hashanah, of hearing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, it's that it's meant to arouse us, to remind ourselves of the plan of where we're supposed to be headed. Because before we're able to do tshuva on Yom Kippur, before we're able to execute that tshuva on Sukkot and through the rest of the year, we have to know where we're headed. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is all about. In Rosh Hashanah, we emphasize the malchios, the zichonos and shofaros, to remind ourselves, to realign ourselves with where we want to be. Because before a person is able to build the train tracks, they first have to know where the station is. So in Rosh Hashanah, we remind ourselves what the train station is, that the train station is that of the malchios, zichonos and shofaros. And on Yom Kippur, then we actually start laying the tracks in order to be able to get there. And this is the significance of the shofar, because the shofar is allowing us, and it's what gives us the ability to reorient ourselves and to realign ourselves with the trajectory of the world. And there's numerous meaning. I'll just, I guess, we'll save a little bit of the numerous meaning that's given over to the shofar. So on one hand, Rav Tzadok HaKohen explains that the significance of the shofar cry is that it's the cry from the Jew, from, meaning it's the word, it's the sound that's are able to articulate the fact that there's no words that are able to be said. Meaning, there's sometimes that person's so lost that they're not able to articulate in words their feelings. And that's where the shofar comes in. Meaning that sometimes we're so far off from where we're supposed to be. We're completely not on the proper path. We're completely not aligned with where we're meant to be. That the only thing that's able to express that is through something which is beyond human speech. And that's where the shofar comes in, says Rav Tzadok. Because the shofar is it's the homing sound of the Jew who is so lost, so far astray, that he doesn't know what to turn to. So in Rosh Hashanah, we blow the shofar to remind ourselves and to come home, to remind ourselves that despite the fact that we may be completely off, we may be completely 180 degrees off from where we want to personally be, but no, we still have the ability to come back and we still have the ability to start again anew. And Ramchal explains that the shofar, that there's two significant shofar blasts in the history of the world. There's the shofar blast that we heard at Har Sinai, which injected good into this world. And then there's a shofar blast in the future, which is going to remove evil. And as what Tzadok HaKohen explains, but there's a third significant shofar blast, the shofar blast that we're doing. Because we are connecting, we're bridging the gap between the past, we're bridging the gap between Har Sinai in the future, La'asid Lavo. Because as we explained all along, on Rosh Hashanah, we're reorienting, realigning, and we're inserting ourselves in the trajectory of the world. So in the trajectory of the world, there's been two significant shofar blasts. The shofar blast heard at Har Sinai, and then the shofar blast that is going to be heard La'asid Lavo. But then really there's a third significant shofar blast, the shofar blast that we're doing in the present. Because as we explained earlier, on the shofar section of Rosh Hashanah, we talk about the shofar blasts of the past. That's the shofar blast that are Har Sinai. We talk about the shofar blast in Sefer Tehillim. That's the shofar blast that we're doing. Then we mentioned verses to talk about the shofar blast, La'asid Lavo. And the point is that our shofar, what we're doing with our shofar, is that we're connecting the past to the future. And we're showing the fact that we have the ability to impact the future because we're inserting ourselves within the trajectory of the world and showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we want to be part of the destination of where the world is going to be. And maybe perhaps just to conclude, so many explain that the purpose of blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah is that in Rosh Hashanah, we crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu as king through the blowing of the shofar, that we're mamluch HaKadosh Baruch Hu for blowing the shofar. And as Aaron Cutler explains, that we're not only being mamluch HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the shofar, but part of recognizing the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our king means that we're also accepting upon ourselves to be his avadim, to be his servants. But the significance of being the eved of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Rav Lubyansky likes to explain, that it's really a praise, meaning Chazal referred to an eved melech as a melech, that the slave of a king is a king. And he gives the following mashal. Imagine you have two types of servants. I mean, you have the type of servant where you just tell him, you know, okay, you have to clean, you have to cook, you have to do this, that, and that. Okay, so that's one type of servant. But then there's another type of servant. Let's say you take the top surgeon general in the United States. So on one hand, he's meshubad, right? He's under servitude because he's on call 24/7. But for him to be on call 24/7, it's a praise to him because he's needed. And the same thing is true when it comes to our Avdus, so the same thing is true when it comes to our servitude towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning that the fact that we're servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a praise to us, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs us to bring about his Malchus Hashem in this world. Nefesh HaChaim, Rechaim Belezhin explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically didn't create the world perfect in order that we would be able to perfect the world. And as we said before, even though the world is eventually going to reach its destination, whether we contribute or don't contribute, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it that we are going to contribute in doing our part in bringing the world to its destination. So every single year on Rosh Hashanah, what we do is that we blow shofar, we say the Malchus Sichmas and Shofros to insert ourselves within the trajectory of the world and to realign ourselves with the true values of this world in order to show that we also want to be remembered eternally. We want to be remembered in the Sefer Zichronos, that eventually there's going to be a day where all the events of the history of the world are going to be recorded that led the world to its final destination point. And we want to be a part of that Sefer. So on Rosh Hashanah, we're reminding ourselves of what this world is truly about. And we are reorienting and realigning ourselves with the values of this world in order that we will be remembered eternally, that we will be an eternal part of this world and bringing this world to its ultimate destination, the destination of this world reaching its state of Ad Merishin Kod Mechet, where the world is just going to be the ultimate expression of the roots of the world, of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. Im Tzashan, Shabbi Bimheira, V'yamenu. Wish everyone a Ksiva V'chasima Tova.
Some comments.